say this, tech, blah, blah, he said this, he said that. It's like, boy, this there will be blood. Stop fucking with me, because y'all fucking with my money. Y'all doing shit. I got 80 accounts right now. I got people that's like, why I got 80 accounts?
The Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. The CIA dropped off this podcast equipment. Welcome to episode 24 of the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast, the best sneaker podcast in the world that updates monthly. Once again, I want to open the show by thanking everyone who took part in the podcast exclusive drop of the Sock Jig socks last time, the Wash Cream ones. They are officially sold out. You know, honestly, I was really blown away by the response. I had ordered way more than I usually do for a drop, and my thinking was I could probably sell most of them. More than half at least, and the rest I can just hold for months later and drop again. But instead, there's a tremendous show of support from the listeners to this podcast. Adding up the numbers, it came out to like 17.5% of the people who listened to that episode went and bought socks, which is a crazy ratio. You know, most people that do this kind of stuff, I bet you if they told them you get a 5% turnaround, that's going to blow them away. 17.5% is crazy. And, you know, this is a very niche podcast. I talk about sneakers in a very specific lane, and it's kind of meant to be that way. I don't do hot takes or wild takes or even, like, you know, contradict myself 6 months later. The podcast is meant to be for those who follow me on Twitter and kind of already aware of my voice. So, you know, so it's not really a sneaker podcast for the general public or, you know, a random YouTube listener. So that's why it means a lot to me for the people who do listen, the people who do ask me when the next episode is coming out, and the people who do show support and buy socks when I have them. So thank you so much. On this episode, the Sneaker Guy of the Week returns. I also talk about recent releases like the Jordan Off-White 2, some Yeezy Supply drops. I talk a little bit about the Astroworld tragedy and you know, how it kind of relates to sneakers. But the main topic of this episode is I do a sneaker power rankings list, which is a mix of, you know, the best silhouettes of the year, but also mixed with, you know, what are people wearing, what are people flipping, and that kind of stuff. So it's not exactly the best shoes of the year, but kind of meant to capture, you know, what are the silhouettes of the moment. And my goal is to do this quarterly, so that way we can keep track of kind of what's going up and down. You know, I was thinking about this, and that's what's kind of missing in a lot of the year-end list, is to show you the kind of the movement of where things were and where things are now. So that's the main topic, but first, pickups, on feet, and skips and misses. On feet lately, still dealing with this foot injury, has been white Safari Prestos. Those are still the most comfortable shoe for me right now. You know, it kind of sucks because I do want to wear those Monarch Pata Air Max ones that I picked up. Also on feet has been the Kiko Kostadinov Yellow Canary A6. Those are also comfortable on feet because the upper is kind of more fabric-y and stuff like that. I wore those on Halloween with my hot dog costume. Pickups, I already mentioned the Air Max 1 Pata. I also got the Ames Reebok Club C, the budget jound Club C. I got the Foam Runner Vermilion, the red one. And I also got exclusive access early for the Concepts 992 Strawberry Kiwi through their VIP program, I guess. For skips and misses, I skipped out on the Air Max 1 Pata, the aqua version, even though I do like it. We'll probably pick it up on GOAT later. I passed because for the first one, the Monarch, I ended up having to pay like, I don't know, like 70, 80 bucks in duty. So it actually came out to resale price. So I figured I might as well just sleep in instead of waking up at 4 a.m. and buy these straight off GOAT as well. Also missed on the Mummy SB. You know how it is with SBs. You enter the draw or enter a raffle and hope to get it, and then, you know, quietly move on with your day as everyone else wins. I also skipped out on the Jordan 3 Pine Green. I really did want to buy that one, but every time I looked at it, I was like, if it was on my shelf right here, would I get the wear the Black Cement 3 or would I wear the Pine Green? And, you know, the answer is always I would go to the Black Cement 3. So that's how I determine if I'm going to skip on a shoe. And, of course, I missed on the Off-White Jordan 2, even though it wasn't even available to try on in Canada, since it seems like it was US only. But speaking of Off-White 2, that leads to our Sneaker Guy of the Week. Sneaker Guy of the Week is, oh, now you hype beasts like Jordan 2's guy? Also known as, if you didn't like them then, you can't like them now guy. And that brings out, well, I've always liked the Jordan 2's guy. Which of course brings out, actually, 2's have always sucked guy. You know, often the same as Virgil's ruining everything guy. But if you say that, emerging from the bushes is the, you know, Jordan 2's are kind of underrated guy. You know, the backlash to the backlash guy. So if you said any of that, you are the Sneaker Guy of the Week. Talk about a couple of the releases recently, so I might as well talk about those Off-White 2's. A few days before the drop, someone was selling these Off-White 2's in size 13 and 14 on StockX for $400-$450 or so. At first, I replied to a tweet like, ah, these kind of crazy sales are almost always just someone who accidentally listed when he meant to do a bid, and they never go through, and it's just usually an accident, and it goes away. And, you know, people tweet about it, and wow, look, this, you know, Paris Dunk sold for $25, but it never actually does. So that was just my kind of throwaway tweet, but then I actually went and looked at it afterwards, and I saw that, wow, there were actually multiple listings and multiple quick sales in size 13 and size 14. So usually what this means is a retailer or, you know, someone who has access to a lot of pairs is basically just quick selling them off. You know, I've seen this pattern pre-drop on so many releases, but it's not just focused on, you know, size 13, size 14, especially not on size 14, which has been really absent in these big collab drops lately. Just check the price of size 14 Travis Fragment shoes, for example. So a bunch of people on Twitter I saw bought them up, but really, I don't think they had that much expectation for them to ship, and I don't think any really did, because after the drop, as you saw, the price shot up, which I'll talk about in a little bit. And really, StockX is not going to penalize anyone, any seller that's level 3 or 4. StockX always wants to nurture those sellers. You know, once I forgot to ship by deadline, and in the past, I would just go the next morning and drop it off at UPS and it was fine. But this time it was like canceled at 7 a.m. before UPS even opened. And they just waived all fees. That's more of what StockX will probably do instead of, you know, outright punishing these sellers who took these bids and had no intention of shipping. So for the Off-White drop on their actual site, that was just the usual all-night bullshit. I didn't bother with that. I think most people were waiting for the sneakers drop, and, you know, I think everyone had all their eggs in the basket of sneakers, so just hoping that there'd be a ton of pairs, kind of repeating of what we did with the Off-White Dunks. And so, you know, at this point, I want to remind you what happened, what I talked about in the last podcast about, you know, the leaked sneakers meeting with Complex and how the VP was standing there, you know, kind of hat in hand going, oh, shucks, we got to get these sneakerheads to believe in us again. And we got to listen to them. And by gum, we're going to do it one exclusive access at a time. So what did they actually do this time? They dropped allegedly 200 pairs of each Off-White colorway. 200 on sneakers for the entire country. I say allegedly because, you know, these days sneaker stock leaks all the time now. It never used to, but someone has a plug and it gets leaked. And there's Twitter accounts that have emerged that kind of leak it as well too. And what was interesting is some of those size charts where they show the size breakdown of stock per size, some of them had zero pairs. And usually if I see something like that, I'm like, oh, maybe they didn't just load all stock yet. And then when there's an actual drop, they will load the real stock. And I think Sneaker has done that here and there, modified stock late, either, you know, after the leak, either added stock when the stock was low or removed stock when it was super high. Anyways, I just thought it was, maybe it's not actually true. But sure enough, when it dropped, those same sizes in size, I don't know, I think it was like 8.5 or 9.5, that said had zero stock. When you opened sneakers and you tried to select 9.5, it was not selectable, meaning that there was no stock of that loaded. So even just going by anecdotal evidence on Twitter, there was not that many people who hit at all. Usually you'll see a ton of Gotham screenshots. I probably saw 10, a dozen maybe. Usually you might see, like, just looking at replies on the J23 app or Soul Links or something, you'll see 40, 50 in, just in those alone. You know, in the NFL, one of my favorite terms is business decision. It's usually used when a quarterback throws an interception. So now the action is coming, you know, at them. And then the quarterback has a chance of making a tackle, kind of, you know, stopping the player so they don't score. And they don't. The quarterback has made a business decision. You know, they could have made the tackle, but they chose not to. Sometimes the quarterback half-heartedly tries so, you know, they don't get killed by teammates in film review later. A very recent example of this was Teddy Bridgewater in a Broncos game where he didn't even try. He just kind of veered away. I know this sounds like a tangent, but I'm going somewhere with this. You know, the quarterback thinks, you know, I got a lot more games to play and the backup is no good. And, you know, as a quarterback, you have to protect yourself from, you know, grievous injuries because of the future value you bring to the table. So the quarterback makes a business decision to not make that tackle. And really, Nike does this kind of thing all the time. You know, maybe this metaphor is a stretch, but, you know, it kind of made sense in my head. But so just hear me out. You know, sure, they do the theatrics, you know, the leaked meeting to Complex that I talked about, you know, Virgil in IG comments, talking shop, that entire off-white site with a design process breakdown and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to stock numbers on release day, Nike has often made a business decision. Hey, we released 500K dunks last time. That's got to take a little luster off the collab. You know, we got to replenish that NRG, capital N, capital R, capital G. You know, they could have made more pairs, but chose not to in this case. Because Nike has a lot more twos to sell in 2022, so you can't just flood the market with twos if the first one isn't hype. Nike's got to protect themselves from these kind of grievous injuries because of the future value they bring to the table. You know, Nike has made a business decision. I also wanted to talk about this Yeezy supply drop a few weeks ago now for the Yeezy insulated boot, the big khaki one that looks like a blanket. I wasn't up for that drop because it's usually like 5 or 6 a.m. my time. But what was different this time is they added an SMS text verification. So, you know, once you got to checkout, you had to enter your cell phone number, you get a code on your cell phone, and then you enter that code and then you could check out. Otherwise, you couldn't, which stopped a lot of bots. But a lot of people also entered their cell phone and never got a code. I tweeted about it saying, you know, even though people were able to cop this time manually, a lot of people also didn't, and criticized it for being a brittle solution because some people will get the text and others won't. And phone networks can't handle that kind of sudden throughput. It's like, you know, 50 people rushing through a door when only one or two can go at a time. We saw this with the Union raffle. You know, I never got a text for that. Even Off-White official site tried it once and bots found a bypass like instantly. You know, I don't think bots found a bypass this time, but I'm sure they're going to try for next time. And this was a shoe that, you know, looks like a Tauntaun's feet. So demand was probably a lot lower. You know, imagine if it was the black 350 or, you know, the upcoming Beluga reflective drop. Really, I don't think the phone networks could handle that kind of stuff. So I tweeted about it and some of the Adidas devs who work on the EU side responded. A couple of them, I think, were formerly in sneaker Twitter and worked for certain bots and stuff, but now are, you know, have crossed the aisle to the other side. And one of the response from one of the devs, Gecko Squadron, was, I don't think you can blanket discount things like SMS verification or similar just because of some previous failed implementations. And another dev or manager guy, Vlad, said, folks, it's all about making it easier for people and less profitable for automation. There is no single good or bad solution for this. Today it's SMS, tomorrow could be something different. And yeah, it won't work for everyone, but we were actually pretty happy with today's results. So, you know, it was good to see that the devs are actually trying something for once. It's because you never hear of like Foot Locker devs reaching out or saying anything that we're trying anything. And this might have been the first time I had personally seen where they were trying things and kind of engaging with, you know, Twitter. But it also showed that they were very aware that it wouldn't work for everyone. And it probably did stop most bots when SMS verification was on, because there was no way for them, you know, no way for a bot to actually prep for that. And they probably have these Splunk logs and shows how many times the verification attempts were made and how many text codes were returned. And, you know, compare that to what the stock they had. They have all that kind of data. But, you know, it's not the best user experience, you know. It's a success in that some people get it and some don't. And, you know, it just feels so out of your hands if you get a reply or not. You know, no one likes the Shopify drawing a box around a cat thing. But that's in your hands. You can draw the cat and you can practice and you can get it tight as possible around the cat and you'll get through it the first time. Whereas if you have T-Mobile or whatever, you might not ever get a text. So, but at least the Adidas devs have been active and they're trying something. You know, maybe next time they'll make you play Connect Four. You know, you compare that with both the Microsoft and Amazon site and how they handle drops with both the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox. At least here in Canada, when Amazon drops PlayStations, they're next to impossible to cop manually. You might have a monitor and you get an alert and you try to add it to cart and check out, but it's usually already gone. And most of that stock goes to Ominous, AIO, and other retail bots who have kind of mastered that checkout process. Xbox site, the Microsoft site, is the exact same thing for Series X. You get the alerts, you try to add it to cart, I don't know, it either times out or something like that. And those are two giant companies, Microsoft and Amazon. There are not very many tech companies bigger than them. And they have a giant tech network with AWS and Azure and a ton of tech and a ton of dev teams. But they don't do very many of these flash sales at all. So they haven't dedicated any time to addressing the issue. You know, they probably realize, like, do we really want to have a solution for one product when most of the time Amazon is selling millions and millions of other products instead? Even though these teams at Adidas and Shopify might not always get it right, you know, at least you know that they have made it a priority that they actually have a dedicated team or teams working on it. The ultimate, of course, would be if you could actually have a good user experience at the same time and it was easy to do and you're verified that you're human. But for now, you gotta, you know, hope you can draw that box around the cat in time or get that SMS code. I also wanted to talk about the Travis Scott and the Astroworld tragedy. You know, usually I don't comment on stuff like this, but I'll share a few thoughts now that it's been a little bit away from it now. You know, I remember, you know, that night checking Twitter, you know, reading up on something that's happening. There was just so much misinformation coming out too. They don't know what to believe. I remember hearing the story about the people are getting stabbed by needles and things like that and just not believing it at all. And sure enough, it came out that that's, you know, most likely just a hoax. So that's why I don't believe it's a great time to be tweeting or sharing anything you see. But, you know, that's just me. And someone else can have the opposite opinion where they want to, you know, share every video they come across. You know, but over the next few days when there was more clarity on what happened and, you know, what a tragedy it was with those lives that were lost, you see the responses that people have. And when it comes to grief, everyone's going to have a different response. You know, I think I saw the whole five stages of grief over the next few days. You know, from denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and the last one, acceptance. And then when you mix in fandom with all that and the way fandom is these days, where it's just so much, so amped up and amplified and, you know, the stanism and tribalism where this side is right and the other side is wrong. It's just a bad mix in my opinion. So that's why I didn't share much thoughts about it on Twitter or anything like that. But, you know, one of my thoughts was it really shouldn't take a tragedy like this to have a learning experience. You know, learning's got to be incremental along the way. When it comes to these kind of shows, that especially with where rap is now, you know, these rap stars are rock stars now. And there wasn't mosh pits at rap concerts before. You know, maybe that started with Odd Future or Cardi or someone else I'm missing. But so when they had these shows, there were shows in the past where people were passing out or needing medical attention. But it wasn't a tragedy then because, you know, people got the help and crisis was averted. In fact, if anything, you know, these ragers raging was a part of the show itself. So nothing was ever learned there where it could have been learned, and it just got worse, and it led to this tragedy. So when it comes to like assigning blame, from what I can tell, when a performer is on stage and the lights are shining on them, they can't really see that much other than a few feet in front of them. So even though in the video it looks like Travis is not even like looking or caring about what's happening, from what it appears is he may not even be able to tell. But, you know, as a performer, one of the jobs of that performer is to take care of the audience. You know, I've been to a lot of metal and punk shows. There's been mosh pits and things like that. And the band is always, you know, keeping an eye on that. I haven't been to a big festival because that's just not my thing. So I've been in smaller venues. You can always see when the performer is taking care of the audience. And they would stop the show and things like that. But I'm sure Travis is right now doing a lot of soul searching about how could this happen and how did I let my music and kind of the persona that I portray and this rock star thing get to the point where such a tragedy could happen. So I'm sure there's a lot of self-blame in that, and I'm sure it's going to be a hard time coming to accept that. But that's one of those things where you've got to come to that alone, and it's not going to be easy and it's not going to be quick. I'm sure there's people in the audience that feel guilty and feel like they saw what was happening in front of them, but they couldn't do anything. They couldn't even like escape or move because it's just so crowded. And really, the promoter and the city and things like that, they need to take care of so much more, you know, having the right security and medics and enough water and all that kind of stuff. So when it comes to that kind of blame, I'm sure it's going to be up to lawyers now to determine who is at to blame here, but you know, this story doesn't really have much to do with sneakers, and that's what I thought about it. That's why I didn't tweet that much about it at all. But Travis Scott rules all when it comes to sneaker media, so it pops up and it comes up. I remember, later when sneaker media accounts were posting about Travis sneakers and the Air Max 1 and stuff, I felt like jokingly replying like, hey, read the room. But then when you check the replies, people had already said that, but like seriously, so that's a sign that maybe it's not a good time to make jokes. That's why I said it's okay not having a take on this and how it affects Travis's sneakers and what should Nike do, and because it's just a respectful thing to do at the time. So, you know, a few days ago, I see this tweet on my timeline from MJO23Dan, who's a well-known YouTuber guy in the space, and his tweet was, the next move for Travis and Nike after this postponement is to destroy the shoes. It has no business being in circulation. Hate me. This tweet was, of course, sent out after Sneakers posted an update saying that the Air Max 1 is going to be postponed. I quote tweeted that tweet and I said it was a bad take. I think I said today in bad sneaker bad takes. You know, I wasn't in a mood to have a Twitter beef or anything, so I kept it respectful and I basically just said, I don't see the correlation between destroying sneakers and the tragedy. And I said something like, since he's a big OG Jordan fan, it's not like Jordan stopped releasing shoes after the tragedy of, you know, when people were getting shot for their sneakers in the early 90s. If that was the case, you know, Jordan line would have stopped right then. Really, I don't think Michael Jordan ever addressed any of that kind of shootings and stuff around his sneakers till very recently in the last like 4 or 5 years. Anyways, back to the tweet. You know, he's free to post whatever he wants and I'm free to respectfully disagree. And I think that's how Twitter should be. He wanted me to offer a solution and I was just kind of like, why? Why am I offering a solution? I don't know. I think they should have just taken a break, and that's what they did. And Nike has vaulted the Drake Raptor 4s and Strawberry Coughs for almost a year and a half. Nike knows how to vault things and take a break. But he was adamant that I kind of offer some sort of solution. So, you know, by his logic, Travis should never release music ever again because it's forever linked to this tragedy. As I said on Twitter in, you know, one of the replies, that it's not like Travis is going to retire from music forever. You know, one day he will record again. One day he will release music again. So Why can't a Nike shoe affiliated with him also release? Why do they need to be destroyed? But why do I even have to say that that is the day that Travis Scott should release this? Besides, you know, it's said that Nike is the greatest marketing company and they just happen to make shoes. So I'm sure the greatest marketing teams in the world are monitoring the situation. They don't need help from Twitter accounts. And then the next day, some NFT avatar idiots started replying to me saying that I'm on his nutsack and shit like that, on Travis's nuts, and, you know, just talking disrespectful to me. So I spent a good hour and a half or so just talking shit about NFTs and their bullshit, which actually got me locked on Twitter, because apparently one of the tweets that got me locked was telling him to STFU, shut the fuck up. But there were other tweets where I just said, you know, suck my dick. But I guess he can't say that either. That's not really harassment. That's kind of an invitation. Or maybe I just know too many people from New York. Anyways, I don't have a real solution for this, for Nike's problem and stuff like that. Nike's got to figure it out. I don't think Twitter accounts should be out here moral grandstanding and, you know, virtue signaling and shit like that. I don't know why they do that. They maybe do it from, you know, a good place where they just feel wrong seeing that Travis Scott shoe. Or they could be these NFT avatars that are look like fucking someone's drizzling shit and think they're better than you. Or it's like the other stuff I talked about, where this mixed up fandom and bullshit that we all go through now, where someone is just irrationally hates Travis and now wants to jump in on this and now, you know, project themselves as the highest moral character. Whatever it is, I don't think it's the right solution. Like, you can just act normal online. If everyone just acted normal, like a normal person, Twitter would be a lot better. You wouldn't have to be deal with these fucking morons with avatars that look like prison bread. I think it's a time to be empathetic for, you know, for the families, the deceased and injured, you know, for the people who were at the show and had to witness this thing, or people who tried to help and couldn't do anything. You know, I have empathy for Travis Scott. And that's where it mixes in with that fandom stuff I was talking about earlier. If you hate Travis Scott, then you're probably like, fuck Travis Scott, and he's to blame. But if you like him, you're probably like, he's not to blame at all. Or you can be in the middle and just be empathetic on all sides. That's what I am. So I have empathy for all the parties involved at that tragedy, except for the people who go online and try to make it about themselves. Or come into my replies with their ballsack NFT avatar and think they're better than me. But really, they're just fucking idiots and can't even keep up with replies with a clever response. Anyways, I couldn't say it on Twitter. I had to delete those tweets, but I can say it here. You guys can all suck my dick. Okay, I wanted to introduce a new segment called the Sneaker Power Rankings. This is the 2021 Fall Winter Edition. The goal of this list is to show, you know, kind of what are the silhouettes of the moment. So it's not really a best silhouettes of the year type of list. It's kind of a mix of, you know, what's good, what are people actually wearing, what are people actually selling and buying, and what are the shoes of the moment. So it kind of mixes best, what's flipping and what's wearing and all that stuff together. You know, best of the year list more capture exactly that, the best looking shoes of the year. They also don't keep track of the kind of the movement in a list that goes out throughout the year. And you'll kind of see this as I talk through the list. This is inspired by NFL power rankings, where, you know, TV shows and stuff do rankings of what are the best teams right now. And as you see, the teams go up and down as the season goes on. In sneakers, an example of this is earlier in the year, maybe the Sakai LD Waffle is in the top 10. But lately, they've kind of killed it with mediocre colorways and unnecessary triple collabs and things like that. So it's fallen off. A best of the year list would not keep track of that, but this list does. So I might do this quarterly just to keep track of what's kind of going on in sneakers. But most of all, this is just an arbitrary list created by me. If you disagree with anything here, just make your own list and tweet it at me. So I have 15 silhouettes on the list, but first, here's a list of the silhouettes that just missed a cut. So I already mentioned that LD Waffle. There's some really underwhelming kind of collabs lately with the Sakai one, the Clot one, and the Undercover one. So I'm not sure if this means it will just fall off and, you know, Nike will kind of vault it and not bring it back. Or maybe they can bring it back with good colorways and, you know, drop that third collaborator. Another two that I left off the list are Dunk Highs, both the SB Dunk High and just the regular Dunk High. For the regular sportswear Dunk High, there's the Be True to Your School colorways that are the best and are, you know, doing the best in resale as well too. But there were a lot of lazy collabs as well too. The Fragment Beijing Purple, you know, I call it the California Raisin one. And even the Ambush one, I think the Royal one was okay, but the rest of them were, you know, not as wearable. For SB High, there was the Carpet one and the Strawberry Cough. The Carpet one is nice, but they just didn't do very many high SB collabs this year. Also missing the cut are several Yeezys. I got the 700 V1, 700 V3, the 500, the minivan version, and even the 450, which started off hot, and you know, as they kind of restocked over and over again, people realized that, hey, if this shoe is not rare, then it's not exactly special. But as I said, overall, I think Yeezy had a good year, and they did make them available. There were just a lot of colorways that I didn't care for. A lot of the 700 V1s, that whole washed orange series, those ones, I liked all of them. And even the static one I liked, but it didn't make the cut. There's 15 other silhouettes that are slightly better, in my opinion, this year. Number 15, the Crocs Classic Clog. Or really any Crocs. You know, I had to actually look up what the name of the regular Croc sandal was. Classic Clog, I guess. This makes it on the list because, you know, with the pandemic, everyone's working from home, everyone's wearing, you know, Crocs and shit like that. But they also had a good year with collabs. You know, they've had collabs previous years with Post Malone and Bad Bunny and stuff. And this year they had Diplo and even the Cars Lightning McQueen one that hit. They always had these Bieber ones at the Drew House. But I think everyone is looking forward to the Salehe one coming up. I think it's an entirely new silhouette, but yeah, whatever. That is probably one of the more anticipated shoes of this whole fall-winter release schedule than anything else. Number 14, the Air Jordan 3. For GRs, there was several nice ones. There was the Georgetown, the Pine Green, the Racer Blue, and Cool Gray. The collab, of course, was the Ama Meneer 3, which is probably sneaker of the year. You know, I think people appreciate the 3 as being, the most wearable one. I would like to see more OG ones coming back next year, I think. But, you know, they did just do the cycle of the black cement and stuff. So I would love to see the white cement and the proper Nike Air on the back and, you know, no free-through line stuff on there. And Fire Red is probably coming next year as well, too. It might be, I think I've heard. Number 13, I got the New Balance 990 V3, and this one is mostly led off by the collabs that it's had, especially the Joe Fresh Goods one, the Levi's one, there's been a couple Kith ones, and of course the Bodega ones. And you know, the last two, the Kith and Bodega, those ones have been available and easier to get. I think the Levi's one was a little bit more available, or you know, maybe just bricked. And the Joe Fresh Goods one was either, you know, impossible online or kind of more available depending on which city you're in. For GRs for this silhouette, you know, there's usually the gray ones that come out, and New Balance did have several of those, but it's the collabs leading the way. And I don't know what their plans are for 2022 with this silhouette, so I could totally see this silhouette falling off instead of going up. Number 12, the Dunk SB Low. The Dunk SB Low still has that thing where they're, you know, next to impossible to get, even for GRs. There were several really good GRs this year. The Halloween Mummy one, that VCR one that was EU exclusive, or camcorder or whatever it was, VX1000, I think. And then the Jordan Pack special inspired ones, the Court Purple and the Classic Green one. But of course, there's also the big collabs this year, the Supreme one being the biggest one. That what the Paul Rodriguez one, I personally was not a fan of it, but I totally understand why people were, and especially when you have a history with Paul Rodriguez sneakers and SB. And of course that Para one, which is much more widely available, and the resale price kind of reflects that. So overall, I could see, you know, Dunk SB had an okay year. It could have been better. I think last year was a little bit better, but I could see this going up in 2022. I think Concepts might have another Lobster Dunk coming out soon, and things like that. Number 11, the New Balance 992. You know, the 992 is widely regarded as the most comfortable New Balance 900 series model. You know, this year, the GRs were usually just the gray one, restocking a bunch of times. And for the collabs, there were a lot of collabs this year, and almost all of them were hard to get. There was Levi's, J. Crew, DTLR, Studio FY7, Paperboy, Amoeba, and this new Concepts Kiwi Strawberry one. So it's on the list just for, you know, how many of those 992s that they did release, the collabs especially. There's probably collabs in there that I missed. But for GRs, like the gray ones, of course, always sell out, but they're, you know, cheap on StockX or GOAT as well, too. And some of the other wilder GR colorways that they've done don't always hit. So, you know, the burgundy one is probably a little bit more wearable than some of these rainbow 80s neon ones that have come out as well. Number 10, the Yeezy 350. So some people might disagree with the 350 being so high on the list. Obviously, there's no collabs, but for the releases, there's been like MXO to the Light, Ash Pearl, Ash Blue, Sand Taupe, and probably others that I forgot about. But the thing with this shoe is it's not that sneakerheads might be wearing them now. It's everyone else who's wearing them now. It's not like you can just find size runs of them sitting on site somewhere. They go. If they're online somewhere, they will go. They might not resell for as much as they used to, and that's why it's probably at number 10 instead of, you know, the top 5, but it's still a heavyweight sneaker that moves a lot. And really, this is why I made this power rankings list, because a sneaker like the 350 Boost still has an impact in 2021, even if it doesn't make the best of the year list anymore. Number 9. The New Balance 2002R. This silhouette had a good year in terms of both GR and collab. The Protection Pack is a good example of a GR that hit. The gray Protection Pack sneaker is probably one of the few sneakers that released this year that really shot up months later. You know, that was common in 2020, especially after the Last Dance documentary and Eat Jordans and stuff. But this year, there's not many shoes that released where 2 months later they were going for $100 or $150 or $200 plus more than when they originally came out. And I know they have some other real name, but they're called Protection Pack. My buddy Brendan also had a good point and said that they could have been used as a collab and would have been a fire collab, but they kind of wasted it as a GR. But they did have good collabs this year. They had the Slahey one, of course. He is so good at releasing sneakers and seeding it to the right people and then sharing it and then making the sneaker look good in the shares that he has. You know, it's not just, you know, Mia Khalifa making that Water Be the Guide sneaker look good. It's just like everyone else. It's like one after another. But there was also other collabs with Bape and J. Crew. That silhouette is great. It's super comfortable. But in terms of power rankings on a list, I'm not sure if it's going to go up or down. It seems like this spot is probably just the right spot. Number 8. The New Balance 550. Of course, the collaborator here was ALD or Amy Leon Dior, something like that. And of course, the shit ton of GRs that came out. It's a good example of the collab kind of leading the way to people buying the GR. You know, people wanted the ALD one. It was somewhat available. And if you couldn't get it, the kind of the GR versions came out. And they looked just as good for the most part. Number 7. Air Force One Low. You know, this shoe is a juggernaut. And this year, the collabs were Undefeated, Supreme, and Kith. And in terms of GR, there were the Japan pack that came out, the Acorn, and 3M Snake one as well, too, that I was really happy to see. But, you know, didn't really reflect in the market. And there's some other ones like the Valentine one and of course the white on white one that for some reason changed SKU and everyone still wants the old SKU even though the new SKU looks exactly the same. So, and you know, there was a time where they were sold out and, you know, they might be sold out still. And that could be supply chain related and changing of the SKU and all that kind of stuff. So I'm sure they're coming and they'll not stop. But, you know, just look around. You still see cooked Air Force Ones worn by women and guys everywhere. So these are not going away, and that's why they're this high on the power ranking list. Number 6. It's the Jordan 1 Low. The collab of the year, of course, for the Jordan 1 Low was Travis. And, you know, coming up, there's still the Miami Soulfly. For GRs, there was a few nice ones. The neutral gray one is really wearable. The starfish shattered backboard or whatever it is. And the ghost green one I liked as well too. So a good year for Jordan 1 lows. There's also all the other ones like the with the fat tongue and that kind of stuff. And those ones release all the time. Number 5, the Jordan 1 high. You know, I think if I did this list in the years past, this would probably be number 1 or number 2. But now it's kind of dropped all the way to 5. In terms of releases this year, there was a few GRs that were decent, like the University Blue and the Hyper Royal and the 85 Neutral Gray. But there was a lot of like so-so ones as well too, or like the McDonald's looking one and that one where you could cut the collar. In terms of collabs, there was, of course, Trophy Room, and that's its own fiasco. The Travis Frag, the high, which was impossible to get. And there's the KO series that I'm just kind of lumping in here, like with the Billie Eilish one. In terms of Jordan 1s, they know that this is a classic silhouette and they could do whatever they want to it. And that's how they treat it. They throw everything at it. Zippers, lows, platform, whatever. The silhouette is so good, it can just survive all that. And it can survive a year of mediocre releases and, you know, these couple super hype ones that are impossible to get. So Jordan Brand knows this. They know that they can just make a few decent runs of throughout the year in 2022 of Jordan 1s, mix in with the ultra hype, the good cut GRs, and then go back and say 2023 and then do the cycle all over again of Chicago 1s, Shadow 1s, all that kind of stuff. So you can say Jordan 1s are dead now, but if there's a year where Chicago 1s and Bred 1s and Royals and Shadows are coming in, all of a sudden you're going to be saying, hey, Jordan 1s are back. So number 4 is Yeezy Foam Runner, and number 3 are Yeezy Slides. When I remember when Slides first came out, they kind of sat on Yeezy Supply, and you know, people were kind of making fun of them. But people wear them, and same with the Foam Runner. People want them. You see people in fits in them, and people pulled it off on Instagram. So it's like, shit, I can wear that. So these are one of the few releases this year where, if you were to count on what's the steady thing that you can buy and flip, it would be these top 4 silhouettes that are in this power rankings list. And any good reseller was buying up these slides and foam runners when they, you know, dip to a certain price, even on the secondary market, holding them for a few months and then selling them later. Number 2, the Jordan 4. The Jordan 4 kind of took over the spot of where the Jordan 1 was as the kind of the go-to Jordan to wear. In terms of collabs, you know, of course, the big one was the Union. And I think there was this, the Golf one, the East Side Golf one. But, you know, it's usually the GRs in Jordan 4s is where it's at. The University Blue did well. The White Cement is one of the few shoes this year that did really well. And, of course, the Lightning, you know, it's not flipping for a ton, but that's because they made a ton of them. So with the Lightning, they hit that sweet spot of making a lot of pairs, having a lot of demand, and kind of, meeting that demand. Number 1. So number 1, of course, if you haven't guessed it, is the Nike Dunk Low, the sportswear edition. For the collabs, there was the Off-White and the Undefeated. Both had a ton of stock. Of course, the Off-White one had 500,000 stock worldwide. And the Undefeated ones had a ton of stock and, you know, don't resell for a lot, but they're nice and they're wearable. And they were easily available, which was really nice. For the GRs, it was a total mix. It was a drop after drop every week from, you know, these rainbowish colorways to the classic, you know, true to your school tied up by colorways with UNLV and Georgetown and things like that. I think the best GR, of course, was the black white one, the panda one that kind of still restocks over and over again. And no matter how many times it restocks, it still stays at $300 resale or so because it just looks so good on foot, so people want it. Some of the ones that I wish were more widely available, the two nicer ones were the Swedish ones, like the Dusty Olive and the Curry. I think they only really released on sneakers, but they look super nice, and I wish they were more GRs. And really, in 2022, it's not stopping. I'm pretty sure the Dunks are still coming in hordes. All they're going to do is all the colorways that they release, they're just going to flip them a bit. You know, it's reverse UNLV, it's reverse Michigan or whatever. Things like that is what they'll probably do. So that was the Sneaker Power Rankings list. Let me know if I got anything wrong. I will probably redo this list in 4 months or so and probably do a quicker version than I did here, just because this was the first one. And I'm, you know, curious to see what falls off the list, what is added, and what gets kind of reshuffled as the release cycle in sneakers continues in 2022. That's it. That's the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Please take care of yourselves. But also remember, go fuck yourself.